You're listening to a podcast from 702 and Cape Talk.
702 and Cape Talk.
Technobite with Aki Anastasio.
Hello, Aki.
Hello, Eusebius. Good morning to you. How are you doing?
I'm good.
That's good. No, it's a superb show so far. Been a very, very interested in listening to you. Phenomenal.
It is sad that they have so much work to do. I'd rather they didn't have work because that would mean that our democracy is in better health.
Absolutely.
But under the circumstances, we're grateful for them. But coming up, the first issue that we're going to deal with is, for me, one of those things that really have been a long time coming, that with the internet have come massive data.
Yes.
Data journalism is a big deal in the world. But then we have storage problems.
No, there's no doubt about it. I mean, if you look at the stats at the moment, we're creating trillions of gigabytes of data. And by 2020, they reckon it's going to be 10 times more than what we created in 2013. Where are we going to store all of this information? How are we going to store it? And we joined on the line, and we're really privileged to have Nick Goldman, who is joining us on the line from London. He's going to be talking at the BCX Disrupt Summit in November. It's a massive summit that's happening over here. They've got some fantastic guest speakers. You've been talking about Will.i.am. Mm. And Nick Goldman joins us on the line from London. And Nick, a very good morning to you.
Good morning to you too.
Yes, well, lovely to chat to you. And I mean, leading on to from Eusebius's question, can you put it into context for us? How much data are we creating, and how much trouble are we in storing all of this data before we talk about this innovation that you've come to?
How much data are we creating? I think estimates at the moment say 2.5 exabytes of data created every day. No one in their right mind knows what an exabyte is, but it's 1 million terabytes. And a terabyte is like one of those little portable disk drives you buy maybe to do a backup of your documents or of your laptop. So one of those devices is a terabyte, and 1 million of those is an exabyte. So 2.5 million of those devices every day are being filled up around the world with novel information.
Gee, that's insane.
Of course, the way we're dealing with it at the moment is large-scale data centers. They're big, big buildings. They take a huge requirement of space, real estate. They take a lot of electricity to run all those drives. And then in most countries in the world, they take a whole load more electricity to cool everything down. Mm.
Wow, that's pretty insane. So before we carry on, Nick, I must just tell everyone that you are part of the management team at the EMBL EBI, which is Europe's flagship institute for bioinformatics. It's basically the interdisciplinary scientific field that combines computing, math, statistics, and the kind of stuff that you need to interpret biological data. So you're a very, very smart guy. And how you came up with storing everything on DNA goes back to 2011, right? I was doing some reading that you were at a hotel with a couple of your fellow bioinformaticists, and you were having a chat. I mean, what do bioinformaticists chat about in their spare time?
Well, this was our spare time. It was much more fun. What we chat about in our working time can be a bit dry. And on that day, it was a meeting about the computing facility our institute runs. In order to store all the genomics data from around the world, that's part of our mission here, is to store that data and make it available to scientists worldwide over the internet to do their research. And we were having some concerns whether we would afford to keep on providing that as a service for the whole world, given our funding level at the time. And that was a boring day of meetings. But the fun part in the evening in the bar in Hamburg in Germany, was we were just kind of fantasizing about were there any other ways you could store information that wasn't expensive hard disk drives using expensive electricity. And the joke amongst ourselves was that a lot of the data we store comes from the DNA sequences of humans' genomes or other animals' genomes, but DNA itself is in our cells is just a chemical molecule that's used to store information. So we sort of said, well, couldn't we use DNA to store information instead of hard disk drives? And from there, sketching it out on the back of a napkin, we figured that it was sort of possible to do that nowadays.
And how exactly is it possible? I mean, it's amazing because obviously part of your job is to look at biology, to look at nature and say, okay, well, what tech problems can we problem solve by learning from the rest of the world? So take us just at a high level through where it went from there once you had the intuition around DNA storage.
Yeah, so we do spend a lot of our time thinking about the tech solutions that are useful in biology, and that means we and other scientists around the world have a lot of skills in handling, in a laboratory, handling DNA. We were kind of trying to piggyback on that to make a storage system. So everyone's familiar, I think, with the way at a high level, inside your computer, all this information is stored as zeros and ones. And we use a binary or a series of different binary codes that store anything. So an MP3 file or a PDF document, deep down it's a series of zeros and ones, plus a code that tells us how to interpret those to get back the music or the document or whatever it is. Now, DNA is a chemical molecule. It consists of a long chain of four different submolecules that can be stuck together in any order. We usually use the letters A, C, G, and T as a shorthand for the four submolecule names. And you can think of a piece of DNA as a kind of chain molecule with those letters in any order you like. It's really small. We're pretty good at handling it in the laboratory these days. And so we invented our own code that said instead of zeros and ones, let's use letters A, C, G, and T, and let's find a way of encoding our computer files in sequences of A, C, Gs, and Ts. And we initially do that, you know, in a computer itself, but that's just the design for the actual DNA. And then once we have the sequence of A, Cs, Gs, and Ts, and we devised a code to encode information, decode information back again, we can then get that DNA made by specialist companies, and then our information is sitting there in that tiny quantity of the chemical DNA.
Well, you've just blown our minds, Nick, and thank you for explaining it to us. It's really beyond me. I don't know about Eusebius, but I kind of get where you're going at, and it's certainly groundbreaking stuff. And we look forward to your discussion at the BCX Disrupt Summit in November. Look forward to meeting you. We thank you for your time this morning, and congratulations on this awesome work. I think you've really on the way to sorting out one of humanity's biggest challenges on how much data we're going to store. Thank you for your time, Nick.
Thanks, Nick.
My pleasure. Thanks a lot.
Cheers. Bye-bye.
Obviously, he's in the same WhatsApp group as the Naked Scientist.
He must be. You should actually ask the Naked Scientist about him. But, I mean, I think we'd be really left out in that particular group, in the pub.
Absolutely.
Like, we'd be sitting there, are you guys talking about?
Nudes. What is this beauty here next to me?
Oh, this beauty next to you is Lenovo. You know, last week I bought you a 2-in-1 computer. So we're doing a series of these, and this is the Lenovo 2-in-1 computer. So when we say 2-in-1, we mean that it's a notebook that is a tablet as well. So if you look at that, if you lift it up and you tilt the screen right backwards, it goes 360 degrees, and you can use it as a.
Is that why it's called yoga?
That's exactly why it's called yoga. And in fact, I've been to Lenovo's factory in China, and if you look at those hinges at the back, that for me is the engineering marvel, because they've got a special machine that all it does is it keeps bending and flipping this thing over and over. Because, you know, if you use this device extensively, you think, oh, these hinges are eventually going to break.
Yeah.
But this is why this Lenovo is so beautifully designed. It's the Lenovo Yoga, and it weighs 1.34 kilograms. They've managed to fit a 4K screen. It's a touch screen in that device. It features the latest kind of technology, and it's really, really impressive build quality, because it's got the solid metal. So it's a really solid device, and it's an expensive device. It doesn't come cheap. This one's going to set you back about 29,000 Rand. But it's the Lenovo Yoga 910 2-in-1 PC. It's got all the latest gimmicks that you can imagine in terms of processor, touchscreen, screen itself. I was playing with it over the weekend. The one thing that I can say about it that irritated me is when it does get a bit warmer, the fan, you can hear the fan. I expected it to be a bit more quieter. But together with this and the Dell, they kind of interesting devices to play around with. And you look at where computing is going. If you really need a tablet device, this one's for you. But 29,000 Rand, it doesn't come cheap, but it's really incredibly well built.
Value for money. Okay, yeah. And then last but not least, a new operating system and some augmented reality to look
after.
Yes,
so you know Apple announced all their new devices. When they announced their devices, they also announced the update to the operating system. It happens once a year. And this is the biggest update of the year. It's called iOS 11, which is the latest operating system that goes into an iPhone. Not all iPhones are going to be compatible, but from the SE, the 5S, the 6, the 6S, the 6S, and the 7, and the 7 Plus. So it's kind of the newer generation of phones that will be able to be compatible with this system. It comes with a lot of new features. The control center, for example, when you swipe your screen up or down to basically access your instant control screen, it comes with a newly redesigned one, so you've got more functionality on that particular screen. You did say augmented reality, and the new software does feature quite a bit of augmented reality, so you can see where Apple is going with this. They're going to have a lot more gaming, and I've seen some of the games that they're going to be introducing. They're quite phenomenal in terms of what you can now do with these devices. I'm sure that they will have better battery functionality with the new devices. They also say that there's a new keyboard coming that you just need one hand typing, so you'll be able to use your thumb or your finger and instead of using two hands to type. So they're making typing easier, and they're saying that there will be a smarter Siri as well to be able to understand us and do translation of phrases in other languages. Those are some of the big updates that are coming up, and that will be coming out tomorrow, actually the 19th of September, so you'll see an update on your phone. If you've got a phone with tiny bits of memory, just Google how you're going to get around it, because you'll have to delete some of your apps to allow Apple to, because it's a big, big download. So that's what's happening in the world of technology, Eusebius.
Tech and society.
Lovely chatting to you.
We'll do it again next week. Thanks, Aki.
Cheers, bro.